come running back to you. I'd come running back to you. Yeah, I'd come running back to you. Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and it's August the 14th, 2023. This is episode 109, and today's guest is one of the finest athletes come from Southern West Virginia. He's a teacher and coach. He's a professional bowler and a classmate, Mr. Steve Licklider. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Wayne.
Listen, I'm going to tell something that very few people know about you. When you were younger, you was a pretty good marble shooter.
Yes, you know, and it's something my dad taught me when I was real young.
Really?
Yeah.
Back then, the marbles were big. I mean, every school, they'd have tournaments, and the Beckley newspaper had a regular column in the paper about marbles, and winners from around here would go to New Jersey and shoot marbles, and I think there was even a couple world champions from around here, Raymond Gerald, and from down on the river, and it was huge back then. But you did quite well.
Well, you know, let's talk about them guys. I couldn't get by them guys down there. They were world champions. I was probably as good as anybody except a couple of them boys down there on the river. And my dad used to take me as little different places. You know, we'd play different kids, you know, for marbles. And one time I had about 200-pound sacks of marbles at one time. It was something I loved to do. And he taught me. And I couldn't get past him boys down there I guess Whitesville, where they was from down there.
Oh, yeah.
And they were tough.
It's funny. The kids now don't even know what marbles are for. I wouldn't even know where you could buy any.
No,
it used to be that when I went to Sylvia School, kids would come and have socks full of marbles, and it was something big. Now your mom and dad, they owned L&B Supermarket for a long time, and that's kind of funny. I was thinking the other day, you had Margie's, L&B, Johnny Dollar, all those was right there within that quarter mile.
You had L&B Supermarket was in the middle, and they called it the big market in the middle. And you had two little grocery stores on the side. And then up right above it, you had Johnny Dollar's. But back in the days, I mean, the grocery business was good.
Yeah, they all made it.
When Mom and Dad opened up L&B, you know, it was the biggest supermarket in the area. They had three cash registers and opened 7 days a week. And both of them on the side of them, they did well too.
Yeah. What was your mom's maiden name?
Hilbert. And then they were from, her family's from Dainese.
Uh-huh.
And then they moved to Lanark. And of course, my dad always was from the Beckley area.
Yeah. I saw a quote one time. You said you got the worst that your work ethic from your mother. When you started playing organized ball, was it baseball that you started?
Yeah, baseball was the first thing I started.
How old were you?
Well, I'll tell you this story, and this is probably the first time I've ever said anything about this. When I was 8 years old, the Little League, well, you couldn't go to, you know, the 9 years old. And 9 years old went to the minor league. Uh-huh. And you had 10, 11, and 12 for the Little League. Well, Freddie Lewis, who was a great athlete at Woodrow Wilson, graduated in 65 on a state championship basketball team. His dad drafted me as an 8-year old.
Wow.
So when I become 9, I started second base on the Braves Little League team. And nobody had ever done that. Everybody went to the minor leagues.
So you never played minor
league? No. And so anyway, I played there for the Braves for, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I was on that Braves team when you were 11. First time I ever played any organized ball, and I didn't contribute too much, but we had a good team with Mike Garton and John Wooten and Fred Roberts.
Oh, yeah.
And won the league championship that year. And then most of those guys moved on. And the next year, I went to Virginia, stayed with a sister. I didn't play Little League here, and ended up playing a couple ball games down there in Virginia. But you guys had lost a lot of talent. You know, it's kind of tough your 12-year-old year. But I remember seeing an article one time that Preach Wiseman, I don't know how old you and Chubby Hughes were, but Preach, they had took a team. I think Joe Cook was helping. They went down to play in Charleston against the Charleston Indians or something. And they were going to take you guys as kind of managers or something. Y'all were only like 11 or 12 or 13. You remember that trip there? And then Mickey Mantle was down there?
Well, you know, I remember going to Charleston, but I really can't remember the whole thing here. But yeah, I would see when Chubby, in low league, Chubby had to play over at Sophia.
Yeah.
And you know, I asked my dad, why one of my best friends has got to go over there and he can't play here in Beckley with me? And my dad explained it to me. And one of the things that happened, the first year they ever had a 13-year-old state tournament, Babe Ruth, we won it.
Yeah.
And Chubby was on the team, and we played it down there. I think it was in South Charleston down there. I think we beat Huntington in the finals to win it. And then we won it as a 15-year-old. And we really had a good team. But if you remember back then in Babe Ruth, they had American and National League. We only had the one good pitcher was Chubby.
Yeah.
The other teams had Cassidy and Bill Burgess. And if we could combine them, we may have won it all, because we got to the finals up in New Jersey and played a team out of New York and got beat 3-2. But
that was when you were 15.
15, and yeah, Chubby didn't get to pitch the final game because of the rules. But I really feel like if we'd had one All-Star, we'd have really had a shot at doing that. But
I played on the American League. I guess you guys were National League, and you had to beat us to get out of Beckley. And like I said, we had. Me and David Cassidy made the All-Stars from New River Supply, and then you won the states and went up to New Jersey. But you're right, and we used to have 12 teams, and it was pretty solid competition. Well, you played with Blue Ridge in Babe Ruth. Who was your coach? Was Coe Allen the coach?
Coe Allen coached just one year there. Yeah, because David, he was a year behind me.
Yeah.
So when he came up, I'd be a 14. David was a 13, and he played second. Then I went over and played shortstop starting in. We had a guy named Clifford Gravely, unorthodox way he fielded the ball, but I never seen him make an error. And he was the only guy that could hit Chubby. I mean, Chubby was scary at times. You know, he threw the ball so hard, and especially in low league.
Yeah.
You know, he threw 7 no-hitters and 1 hitter. And I used to go over with him, watch the games, and the batters wouldn't hardly get in the batter's box. The parents wouldn't let him because he threw the ball so hard. But anyway, you know, Chubby was a fantastic baseball player. It's a shame he hurt his arm and didn't get a chance.
After Babe Ruth, you played with Joe Goddard was here a week or so ago, and we were talking about that American Legion team that you guys had. And there was 3 or 4 guys from Beckley, and then the Sophia guys, that, and then Scotty Cuthbert from Stokoe. And that team won the states and went to New York or somewhere, didn't they?
Well, yeah, Chubby and I had an option. We could either play in Beckley in that, I think it was Industrial League they had up there.
Yeah, Warren Williams.
Yeah, Warren Williams. And I told Chubby, I said, Chubby, man, you know, in Little League, we had a really good all-star team in Little League. And we thought we was going to win the state championship. Well, I didn't know anything about what was going on over at Sophia. So here comes the Sophia team, and they just killed us. And I told Chubb, I said, listen, them guys you play with in Little League, why don't we go join them guys, you know, for the American Legion? So we did. And I think the next year maybe Gene Gilkerson and somebody else came over there. But, yeah, we won the state. Nobody could come close to us.
Yeah.
And we never lost a team in West Virginia. We only lost 2 games that year, and there was a team over in Kentucky, and there was a team from maybe Tennessee that beat us. But we had Chubby and Kent Martin. Kent Martin threw slow, slower, and slower, and Chubby threw hard, harder, and harder. And it was just a great combination. And we had you know, them Sophie guys, they were really good. You had Scotty at second, and I was a shortstop, but once I moved over there, they wasn't going to move Pernesky to third. And I said, listen, as long as I play, I don't care where it's at.
Yeah.
And I played third base over there, but I was basically a shortstop. And
let's go back just a little bit. We had, when you were younger, you also played basketball. And you've in recent articles or articles I've seen before, you've always credited Jim McNish and Ross Earl and some of those guys for influencing your basketball career. You know, was there anybody else that, any adults that?
Well, you know, the neighbors, I had some neighbors around me, they were older. And this is a story probably nobody knows. When the old armory was torn down and went out to the new one, Coach Van Meter got one of the backboards and gave it to my dad. Because he's coming to the store. And he said, where's that boy at? Dad says, you know where he's at? He's down in that warehouse shooting that basketball. And this is a true story. I had a little ball and a peach crepe up there nailed onto the wall, and I'd shoot it. I was just a little old thing. So he gave my dad a backboard. He said, I've got a telephone pole coming, and I got a guy that'll put it in your backyard over in Temple Street. And we did, and I'm telling you, all the top basketball games was over there on Saturday. High school teams would bring teams. Dad let them play from like 9 to about 1. And then they had to get off there, and then it was the little guys.
Yeah.
And the Stratman bring a team, D'Antoni bring a team. I mean, they was all playing ball right there in my backyard.
I'll be darned.
And it was great. And one of the guys that helped me in basketball was a great Woodrow Wilson player, Buddy Gravely. He was my neighbor. He used to take my pennies and nickels all the time shooting.
Buddy, he had a pretty good average in high school.
Oh, yeah, he did. Anyway, Buddy, we'd get out there playing for pennies and nickels. You know, I'd go out and find pop bottles and stuff. And so eventually I got it. And I asked him, I said, why was you would always take my money? Because he said, because I knew you'd work at it and get better. Yeah. And he was a neighbor. He constantly was working with me and telling me, you know, coming off of screens and things like that. And he helped me a lot. Wow. He gave me a lot of encouragement. But Coach McNish was the one that really told me, he said, you're not going to be real tall because I know your dad and your brother, and they're you know, 5'9" is the biggest thing in your family. He said, I want you to learn to play defense better than anybody. And I asked him why, and he said, because you'll always play. He said, well, you can score, but he said, if you're a great defensive player and you guard that other guard, you won't play. And so he worked with me in basketball, but the biggest thing he worked with me, Wayne, was baseball. He taught me how to hit a baseball. Every summer he worked with me 2 or 3 times a week.
Wow.
And he's the one that really taught me how to hit a baseball. Coach did.
Now, you actually played a little football in junior high.
Well, listen, that was probably maybe my best sport in junior high. Asked me, why didn't I play high school? I was planning on going. But Coach Finis called me and he said, I'm glad we could tell this story because, you know, it's something that Coach Wiseman never asked me. We never got along because of that. Coach Manish said, Steve, you got a great career in baseball. He said, I've never seen anybody hit a fastball like you can and a curveball. And he said, if you go up there, they will start you at running back. And in 3 years, you won't be able to play baseball. You only weighed 145 pounds. And I was pretty fast. And I wanted to play because I really liked football. And so about 2 weeks before that, I decided not to. And I called him and said, I'm not going to go out for football. Well, Coach Manish and I did not know what was going to happen. So the first day in basketball practice, we're all in the room in there, you know, J.W. McNish and, you know, that team and Parson, and I was a 10th grader. And he come over behind me, Coach Wiseman did, and he said, I want everybody to look at this guy. He said, he's got a yellow streak up his back. And he said, he'll never play for me in basketball or baseball.
Really?
And I went home crying.
Oh, my darn.
And my dad was going to take me out Shady. You know, then you had to physically live there. He said, we'll get an apartment. I mean, you'll live out there and you can play at Shady. My mom said, no, you're going to stay right here. And he'll work through this. Well, my sophomore year, you know, because everybody thinks about my senior year. But my sophomore year, I didn't even get a jersey to play JV ball. And everybody thought I was going to be the starting guard over there. You know, and I mean, J.W. Nish said, you know, I'm glad we got a guard that can shoot the ball. Well, I never even got to play the JV the first year. And they started John Beard, you know, and everybody said, what's going on here? Well, the first game I ever started, Wayne, and you probably don't remember, was the last game of my junior year against Richwood. They was undefeated, number one in the state.
At Richwood.
At Richwood. That's the first game that I ever started. I didn't play hardly any ball. He just wasn't going to do it. And so anyway, Coach Maness called me, said, you want to start over at Richwood? I said, nah. I said, he said, yeah, you are. Because the three guys actually got hurt there the last couple of weeks. Lauren Walls, great shooter, had water on his knee and he wasn't the way he could play. Chuck Gerald was going to start. You know, he was going to start there and he hurt his knee the last couple of days of practice. They didn't have anybody by Hales. So Coach Maness called me and said, the one thing I want to tell you, you're the best shooter on the team. When you get the ball, when you're open, do not pass it. Shoot the ball. And I was just blessed. The first five shots I hit against Richwood, and I think I scored a bunch of points, and we beat them in overtime. And that's how I got started playing at Woodrow. If those guys would not got hurt, I may have never, ever played over there. And it was the same way with Henry. You know, he got cut. And if it wasn't for Jim Justice and Charlie Massanope quitting on the basketball team, they were 11 to 12 men. Henry had never played. And then the other thing that happened, John Hutchison, my good friend John Hutchison, started at center on our senior team. He didn't start. But he was, you know, we knew he could rebound. And his offense was starting to come around. Of course, we know what he did his next year. But Hutch got sick about halfway through the season. Hutch got sick. And so Henry, Coach Wiseman played Henry in there. When Hutch come back, he couldn't get his job back. So Henry, he started the rest of the year. And in the state tournament, that year we played Charleston in the finals. Henry had 18 points and 18 rebounds. He became a great player in a short period of time. But Henry and I both could have never played over there if certain things wouldn't happen.
Know that.
Yeah.
I know that your sophomore year, and that was the year after Beckley had won the state championship. J.W. McNish was basically about the only thing he had back. And, yeah. And I went down to the state tournament and played Dunbar the first game. They had that big Woodell boy who went on to Tennessee, and they had Melvin Walker.
Melvin Walker went to Wisconsin to play football.
Yeah, and I mean, that was – it actually was – well, actually, Beckley was lucky to get in there. They beat Big Creek in the region finals. I think McNish stole the ball in the last few seconds, and they won 71-70. And it was kind of embarrassing, though, when he got down there with Dunbar because they –
well, they had a great team.
They couldn't even take a ball in hardly, man. Woodell would stand in there in the front. And I mean, my gosh. But then the next year, I didn't realize that you hadn't played that much. You know, there was your junior year. They called the year that won the state championship. They kind of called them the Cardiac Kids. That was won several games, not just the Richwood game, but Scott in the region was overtime. I think Charleston was overtime. It was a lot of overtime games that year. Beckley didn't blow anybody out.
No. You know, and here's a story that most people won't remember. When we played Madison, the winner was going to state championship up there at Morgantown. Mike Griffith hit a 30-footer with about 2 seconds to go, banking in, if you remember.
Yeah.
Most people don't, but I thought, God, we're going to lose this ball game. And Mike, he was right dead center. And it's about 30-footer, and he banked it in. And we go on, and what's the odds on somebody doing that? And we go on and win the state championship.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. And then, of course, in 68, you guys, that's when you started playing a lot. And you ended up with about a 20.5 average per game. And you think if they would have had a three-point shot back in, it would have helped your game in it? Did you shoot that far out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of my shots have been three-pointers.
Wow.
I practice constantly shooting 20, 25-foot shots. I worked on it. And when I got to college, I could shoot them really deep when I got down at Morris Harvey. But, I started out about that 16, 17 foot, and then, you know, they'd be off of them a little bit, and I'd hit one, and they may move out a little bit, and I'd just keep moving back. They didn't realize I could go as far as I did. I remember, if you remember, we played Martinsville in the semifinals in 68.
Martinsburg.
Martinsburg.
You popped in 35.
And the last one was at the hash mark, right in front of their – they was giving me they was really giving me a hard time, being players on the bench. And I shot my last one right at that hash mark in front of the bench. I don't know what that is, 28, 29 foot. Yeah. And then I just turned around, said a couple things to them, and moved on. But, yeah, I worked on shooting. I mean, I really worked hard on it. And I shot year-round. Even in wintertime, my dad got a chain net, and I used to shoot in wintertime. And I never missed shooting basketball, even when I was playing baseball in the summertime. But, you know, we had a good ball club there, and we played Charleston in the finals, and Curtis Price got hurt early in the game, and we thought, man, we won't get him now. But, boy, them guys rallied and ended up beating us about 12 points. But
well, they had a combination, you know, Larry Harris and that bunch. And
Levi Phillips. They had four guys that went and played Division I.
That's pretty good.
In West Virginia.
Charleston was – they won – well, Bluefield won the football championship that year, and Charleston won the track and the basketball. And then the next year, Charleston won the football championship. But imagine if Bane Surratt would have had a three-point shot.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd have probably averaged 35 points a game. But let's go back to baseball. Now, you said there was a little bit of a problem in the basketball. What happened with the baseball?
Well, I didn't start. You know, I mean, and everybody couldn't figure out what was going on.
Really,
I just never did say anything. And how I got started in baseball? Remember Rex Gwynn?
Oh yeah,
Rex played third base. I was a shortstop, and everybody figured me and Chubby going to go over. You know, we'll both start. He'll be in the outfield and pitch, and I'm going to be the shortstop. And I didn't play any. And what had happened? Rex Gwynn got hurt. He got hit. Batting, he just never could stay in that batter's box. So Wiseman tried several people at third base. Well, I played, you know, that 1 year over to Sophie at third base. Of course, my next year I played shortstop. Of course, Chubby and I, off that good team that we won the state championship, we got to come back for another year, and we got beat in the finals in American Legion. Parkersburg, Swisher's team beat us. But Rex got hurt, and he just couldn't stay in the batter's box. And so Coach Wiseman tried several people at third base, and you know, it's different playing third and second or short. I mean, the ball's up on you quick, and I'd played it, and so after he tried two or three people, he tried me, and then I got to play.
Yeah.
Of course, we won the state championship that year. Chubby pitched three games of shutout ball, and within about 12 days, he beat East Bank, shut him out. He beat Sophia, Joe Goddard's team, shut them out. And then I forget who else. These were the top teams in the state. Chubby threw three games. Nobody scored on him. And took us to the state championship. He was a sophomore that year.
That was a thing that Joe Goddard and I were talking about. You know, all the teams, Class A, Double A, Triple A, were all in one division. And so you guys had to play a sectional against Sophia when they had an excellent program. And you beat them your sophomore year, then you lost to them in the junior and
senior year. Yeah.
And then they, I think when the senior year was when they beat Kaiser, who had a 50-some game win streak and defending state champions, and then they turned around and lost to Parkersburg, I think. But there were some good teams in the section and region.
Oh, yeah, Sophie had they were really good. The reason why we beat them is called Chubby. If Chubby wouldn't have pitched, we wouldn't have won. And we go up to Parkersburg State Championship. I think we're like 8-1 because we had a lot of rain out. We're playing Wellsburg, and I think they'd won by almost 40 ball games. And they like 40-5 or something like that. And I remember the umpire said that kid that pitched for you guys, he said, I umpire Double A. And he said, I haven't seen many pitchers' fastball moves like his. I said, I know it. He throws it hard. And there's no doubt in my mind Chubby had a chance to play Major League ball. He wouldn't have hurt that arm because he had a fastball. He had a curveball that was 12-6. And he threw a knuckleball sometimes too. But, I mean, nobody ever hit him everywhere I ever played with him. He lost one game one time.
Well, I think at Wellsburg game, it was civil errors.
There was quite a few errors. The only time I ever seen it, that's the only time I ever seen anybody hit him. But there was a lot of errors. But Jerry West's nephew, beat us 1-0. And what a great game that was. People watched Chubby pitch and Kim West pitched.
Wow.
And it was 1-0. We got beat 1-0. But Chubby was, you know, when we go to the Babe Ruth 13-15 American Legion, nobody ever beat him in them games. And I don't think he ever lost in American Legion.
Yeah.
We beat him once in Babe Ruth because Cliff Gravely could hit him. For some reason, he could hit him. I don't know why.
Jack Cook down at Marshall liked you guys from around here. He took four of you, Kent Martin, Joe Goddard, Chubby, and you. But you guys went down there, you and Chubby, thinking you're going to play basketball and baseball. Was that the deal? Or?
Well, we had five, really. J.C. Jones went down there, too.
Oh, did he go down there?
He probably had more talent than all five of us.
I've heard that.
He could run, he could hit, and he could play outfield, and he had a good arm. But no, what had happened, I went down on a full basketball scholarship to Marshall.
Oh, okay.
And they said, you can play both sports. Well, and so Coach Johnson said, Steve, you know, you're going to have the, what do you call it, when you first get on campus, the baseball team plays. And he said, you going over and play with the freshman team and work out with them because you don't have to go through all this stuff. So I go over and work out with the baseball team. And I'll never forget this. You know, we had five Sophia Legion players on that team. And we played the regular team, baseball team. Had a big pitcher named Hewlett. I mean, a really good pitcher. His name was Hewlett. And Chubby and Kent Martin shut that team out. We beat them. Those two guys, I think Chubby threw four innings and Kent threw three. They went and played seven innings. And we beat the varsity. Shut them out. And, but what had happened to me, they wanted me to only play one sport. And they promised me when I come down there I could play baseball because my scholarship was on basketball. And I told him, I can't do that. I said, if I'm going to play one sport, it's baseball, and I'm not on scholarship, and I can't stay down here. And that's what happened to me. And so I went looking around and went up D&E where Hutch was up there, John Hutchison. And then I went to Morris Harvey. And they always had a good basketball team, but the baseball program wasn't real good. But I met Coach Nazika, who pitched for Ohio State. And that's what sold me on going there was the baseball coach. It wasn't a basketball coach. Or I was going to go to Florida and play baseball. Mm-hmm. And then Freddie Lewis, you know, he was down there. And he said, there's a team down here, one of the schools down there, wants you to come down and play baseball. So I said, well, if I go to Morris Harvey, my family, friends can watch me play. And that's when I decided to do that. Now, Chubby, I think the reason why he left, part of it was, we got basically what we call player of the year in baseball. Me and Chubby did together. And there was money there for it, Marshall. Well, when I was on a full scholarship in basketball, well, they was going to give it all to Chubby, help him out. Well, what happened, they didn't do it. And so Chubby decided to leave and go to state because it was more expensive there at Marshall. So he decided to go down there to state and play down there. But there was part of that reason because of the money thing.
Yeah. Now, go back just a second. I didn't mention that you were your senior year, that state tournament. You and John Woot were all tournament, and that you put 35 against Martinsburg in the semis, and then you guys got beat in the finals. But you two, and then of course, John went on and played at WVU. But at Morris Harvey, they won their first in baseball, they won their first conference championship when you played. You said the program wasn't real strong when you got there.
Wait.
Did you play third there or short?
I played both.
Okay.
And they got a kid out of New Jersey. He was a really good shortstop. And he couldn't play third base. And we had a good second baseman. So Coach Zika called me in his office. He said, I want Carlucci. He needs to play and he can't play anywhere but shortstop. And I said, Coach, wherever you want me to play, second, sure. He said, no, you play some third base, you play third base. And that's how that developed. And I didn't mind it because I just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And that team, he told me in an interview, he said, I need a player like you, maybe get one or two more. And he said, in a couple of years, we can win this thing. Well, we did. We won it in 2 years. And I used to visit Coach all the time when I was traveling, bowling and stuff. He said it was the best team he ever had. And I got to see him about 2 weeks before he died. And we talked about an hour and a half, and he said, yeah, he said, that team was special, you know. Plasky went on to play Double-A with Cincinnati. We had three or four of them guys that went on to play some minor league ball. Yeah, that was probably the best school team I ever played with. We all got along good. We played good, you know, and hustled. And in all the sports I played team-wise, that was my best team I ever played on.
Now, when I was down at Morris Harvey, it was like the Beckley connection. Roger Wood was still down there. Henry was playing basketball, and then you were playing basketball. And there was the basketball had a pretty good bunch of guys. I mean, you had Tom Neal and Bobby Wesley and Kevin Merchant. And I mean, there was did you guys ever win the conference?
Yeah, we won the conference one year. We didn't get to go to Kansas City. And what had happened, the year we had a really good team. That one year we had, Marshall didn't beat us for much, and Moorhead didn't beat us for much. And we go down and play Guilford down in Greensboro. They had three NBA players on that team. We beat them down there. We was playing four big people and me at guard. Dale Angles, South Charlotte, about 6'7". Neil come from Tennessee. And we had a freshman boy come from Maryland, 6'7". Smothers kid. He had all the talent in the world. And what had happened, and we had beat up on everybody in the conference. And we're playing, the only team had a chance to beat it was Fairmont, because they always had a good team. They got beat early. And so we're playing Glenwood, which we'd been beat twice really bad. And we're down there warming up, and we come upstairs down at the Civic Center in Charleston. And Coach McFessel said, "I got some bad news." And I thought somebody done died or something, you know. And he said, "We've been declared ineligible."
Oh.
And what had happened, Shane Phillips had 12 hours and dropped six of them. And he wasn't a full-time student.
I remember that.
And I'm telling you, that's the only time I ever seen my great friend Henry Dickerson mad. But I mean, he was livid. And the professor said, "Do you guys want to play?" Of course, we wanted to play, you know. And so we play. And Glenn will beat us by 1 point. It didn't make any difference, but man, we was all just down. And the thing I couldn't understand, Wayne, why he let Shane Phillips play the game. No, I talked to Henry about that. He said, "I don't understand why he let him play."
Yeah.
I said, "Well, you know, I got my opinions about it. Shane shot the ball about 15 times. I think he was 2 for 15. And, you know, he was a great guy coming off the bench, get the rhythm going faster, you know, and he could drive and pass and get the guys open shots. He was really good at that. And, I said, you know, I just, deep in my heart, I believe that Coach didn't want us to win that game because it was really going to look bad. And we lose by one, but none of us, I mean, it was terrible trying to play out there.
You had a couple of your best games at Morris Harvey. I was against Bluefield State, I think. I don't know. I know you had one time, you 20-some points, and people that don't remember that back that far, but the conference was tough. I mean, you know, the Bluefield State, all these teams had good athletes. I mean, it was
West Liberty, Fairmont, it was, you know, that particular ball club, the one I said that I felt like we could win the national championship, and we was beating up on everybody. And we had five guys that averaged in double figures.
Wow.
Tom Neal was, I think Tom Neal averaged 18, Henry 16, I was 15. Merchant was, he was probably 13. And then Dale Angle was, I think, was around 12. And we had a great shooting team. Everybody could shoot the ball other than Henry. Tom Neal was as good a shooter as I was. He was 6'6". And Merchant was a good shooter. And but that's unusual. You got five guys that average in double figures. We led the conference in scoring. We led it in shooting percentage. And we got it to the open player. Because we knew, other than Henry, you get it to one of the other guys, they could shoot the 15-footer or 20-footer, whatever. And it was a really great team. And Joe Retton said the same thing. When I'd go visit him at the Civic Center, he knew when I come up there, he knew where I was. He said, "How's the bowling?" I said, "It's good." I sat with him for about an hour talking. And he said that y'all guys had far the best team that year. And he said it was a shame that y'all got, you know, disqualified. And that's when he told me about Henry. He said, of all the years I coached and come to the conference watching after I got out of coaching, he was the best offensive rebounder I'd ever seen in the conference. And Henry was only about 6'3". They listed him 6'5", but that's for that afro, you know.
Yeah.
And Joe Retton said, "I've never seen anybody offensive rebound like he could, and he was just probably the smallest center in the conference, and he was, you know. And but he said, y'all guys had it all. You had speed, you could shoot the ball, and it was a shame y'all got disqualified, you know. And it was, because it was my senior year. I had baseball to go to, but it was Henry. I felt so sad for him that he just, there was no doubt he was going to be the MVP of the tournament, you know. And if we got to the finals, win or lose, he would have been the MVP, because he had such a great tournament, and he didn't get that MVP. And that's the only thing that he never won in that conference. He'd won everything else. And
as we're talking, this is August the 14th, 2023, and our friend Henry Dickerson passed away on August the 10th, and he was your best friend. Yeah. I mean, you guys, didn't you guys room together?
Oh, yeah, we roomed together and played high school ball, played college ball. And we roomed together at college and off the campus. One year we roomed, had an apartment over in town, and when the Capitol, they gave us a job over cleaning the marble inside the dome. I used to get up on them scaffolds way up there. Henry would, you know, he didn't go up on them scaffolds. I'd get up there really high, and we'd clean the marble. And but you know, we were best of friends, and he was the best teammate I've ever had. The other thing was that I've never met anybody that worked like he did. He made himself a great basketball player. He didn't have that talent that, like Merchant, Bobby Wesley, them guys. Man, he worked and worked, and he, his last couple of years there at North Harbor, we could shoot the ball pretty good. And I helped him, and we worked together on his shooting. And but he was a great, great athlete that worked hard, and he did the same thing in his classroom. I remember when he'd study 7 or 8 hours, I'd read a couple chapters and go in there and take the test. But he made himself a B student, and he made himself a really good basketball player. And the other guy that helped Henry was Coach Curacerto. Uh-huh. He worked with him before practice and afterwards, and he wasn't even on the ball club. You know, he didn't play that first year.
Yeah.
And when Justice and Massanoppo decided they weren't going to play no more, he got to come out. And I'm telling you, Wayne, in a short period of time, that junior year, his offense was so-so. We knew he could rebound and play defense. In that short period of time he started when Hutch got sick, and then we got to the state tournament. Boy, his offense, it was unbelievable how good he got in the last half of the season. Like, say, he had 18 points and 18 rebounds against Charleston. I mean, and they were so much bigger than we were, you know. And the same thing junior year. We had a small team.
Yeah.
John Wooten carried us in on the rebounds up there against Charleston. I mean, you know, John could jump. And they had guys, their smallest guy was as big as our biggest guy. And John, you know, he carried us on the rebounding, you know. But that particular team, we had a great shooting team. We had me on one wing and Mike Griffith on the other. And the thing that Charleston, the mistake they made up there, they played zone. And me and Mike Griffith had a really good shooting game. And now, when we played them our senior year, Charleston, they played box and one. I didn't know what a box and one was, but I found out. Skip Mason trailed me, and everywhere I went, they was double-teaming me.
You got about 13 that game,
didn't you? Didn't get to shoot the ball a whole lot. And I used to tell Coach Akers, Willie Akers, when we bowled the travel, we used to go to Logan. He owned that bowling center, Logan. He'd come over and watch us because he knew I was going to be over there. And I'd sit and talk to him. I said, you know, you probably cost us that second state championship. He said, wow. And I said, the article was in the paper, how do you stop Beckley? He said, you double-team Lickwider, don't let him shoot it.
I remember that.
And you'll be fine. Well, that's what Romano did. And Skip Mason was 6'4". He was quick as anybody. You know, he was All-American track hurdler in Edward State, and he was quick. He was after me, and I just didn't get to shoot the ball very much.
Now, you had your senior year at Morse Harvey. Well, let's go back just a second. You were your junior year at Morse Harvey of baseball. The Pirates were interested. Pittsburgh Pirates were interested in you, and you kind of prolonged signing with them to do another year.
Well, what happened? I worked out with the Triple A team a lot. I got to know some of them guys. Art Howe was there, and Parker and them guys were there, and I worked out. And Art Howe, they felt like I could play shortstop. Very seldom, you know, that last year in Legion, I only made one error that whole year. I didn't have the range as Traverse did, but I had the glove and I could hit the ball. And Art Howe felt like I could play shortstop for the Pirates. And so what had happened, Coach Zika and the Pirates people got together and they thought they was going to sign me and send me to single A. Well, they thought, well, I'd play one more year at Morse Harvey and then they'd send me to double A, you know, because they knew they was interested in me. And so I was going to stay there, but I got hurt the two games at the end of the basketball season. I got this shoulder separated and calcium got on it real bad. And when they worked me out the first 2 days, I was okay. But the third day, I couldn't brush my teeth. And so I lost the opportunity there. But, I was banking on doing that.
But your senior year, you lettered in four sports at Morse Harvey. And that has never been done before, I don't think. It never has been done again.
No, you know, and I didn't think anything about that. And when honestly, when it came out in the Charleston paper, when they inducted me into the Hall of Fame down there at Morse Harvey, I didn't even realize it. But what had happened, when I got on campus, I went and worked out with the soccer team to get myself in better shape, get my legs and stuff. And so Coach Robinette was from Mullins. He was the cross-country coach. He said, Steve, I need somebody, one more guy running cross-country to get me some points. And I said, Coach, I'll do it. I said, that'll just get me in better shape. Well, I wasn't thinking about anything else. Then that was the only year I got the bowl. You know, and we won the southern part of the bowling. We had a couple guys up in New York, New Jersey, on the bowling team. They were good bowlers. And
when is bowling season in college? Is it in the fall or?
It's not during basketball season. I believe it is. I think it's, was it early part? I believe it was during football season, you know, during that time. But anyway, we won the southern part. And Glenville, which had a fantastic bowling team, they beat us. And of course, they went on and won the national championship in bowling. I think they won it a couple of years. They had them boys from Jersey and up north there. And but I got to bowl that one particular year. So that particular year, I lettered in four sports, didn't think anything about it. And then when I read that thing in the Charleston paper, I still wasn't sure. And then I started thinking back, yeah, that was a year that I crossed country and bowled, and I only got to bowl that 1 year. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the bowling a little bit. You never got extremely serious about it till after college, but I mean, you bowled all the way through youth. I remember seeing you bowl when you was younger. I had a classmate, George Moss, and he used to have me come up there and watch him sometimes on Saturday mornings. And a lot of times you were up there bowling too. And then I know one particular year, you and your brother Ronnie and Steve George, Sam Hampton, y'all had a team called Little Champs or something. And y'all,
Andy Fox was the other.
Andy Fox, yeah. Y'all won a trip to New York or something.
Well, what happened? We won the state YBA bowling thing. I was a sophomore that year, and cause see, I wasn't playing no basketball over there, so I went on and I went on and bowled with them guys. We were state champs. The trip was and this is probably a trivia question. I don't know. Has there ever been an All American from Woodrow Wilson, first team All American, come out of Woodrow Wilson? I don't think so.
Not that I know.
Well, I was first team All American bowler. What had happened? I won the state YBA bowling tournament. It was held in St. Albans, Adventure Lanes. And it was a trip to the national. My brother won it 2 years earlier. He was state champs and went to D.C. And you get every state sends three bowlers, scratch bowler and a handicapped man and then a woman bowler. And it's a fantastic trip. And my brother went and they take you everywhere. But what had happened, I told him, no, I'm not going. I said, I got baseball to play, Legion ball. Well, Goddard and Chubb and all them guys said, we were down there practicing. They had called a little meeting there, and they said, Steve, we want you to take that trip to D.C. We're playing the sectionals, and we've done beating everybody in five innings. Go up there, and I've never been anywhere, you know, and said, go up there and take that trip, go up there and bowl and see the sights and all that. So I did. Well, and believe me, I wasn't that good of a bowler. The thing I could do, even when I started, I had a good eye and hand coordination. You set a pin up, I could hit it. I didn't strike much. I could hit that hit pin and make spares. Well, so I go up there and bowl in this national tournament. Every state had a scratch boy and a handicapped boy and then a girl. So I'm in the scratch division. I'm probably about 170 average. You know, I mean, I can hit the head pin, make spares. That's about it. I go up there and I'm bowling a guy named Dave Pearson out of Thousand Oaks, California, for the national championship in youth bowling. My brother Steve George is with me. And anyway, and I'll be honest, I wasn't nervous because I didn't know much about bowling. I just knew I could hit something standing down there. Well, this guy was like a professional. I mean, he could hook it. He got the foul line. He looked like people on TV. And he beat me like 2-0 to 170 something. He told me, he said, his family owned the bowling center. He's been bowling since a little teeny thing. And I said, well, I bowled a little bit there. And I'm not much of a bowler, but I said it worked out pretty good up here. But what they did, Wayne, they had two categories. They had Scholastic All-American. You took tests. And the top six, they got scholarship money to go to college. And then they had the scratch bowlers. So they took the top six scratch bowlers. They were the All-American bowlers. And then you had the Scholastic All-American. So I was first team All-American bowling. There was never anything in the paper. I mean, it wasn't no big thing to me. And I told the lady, I said, I'm not going to take this test because I don't want to take something away from somebody that may use it. I've got a full scholarship to play basketball at Marshall University, so I didn't even take the test. And that's something probably nobody knows.
After college, you started working with Schoenbaum. Was that his name?
Yeah, I was going to work for Alex Schoenbaum. Yeah.
Okay.
He's going to teach me to be a big wheel in Shoney Corporation, what he was going to do.
Did you ever start for him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I started working for him. One of the things I did, one of the first jobs he had me doing, he wanted me to go in that bowling center, the Boulevard, and he said, I want to know, he's open 7 days a week, 24 hours, had to show his restaurant inside of it. He said, I want to know, do I need to stay open 24 hours, 7 days a week, and do I have too many employees? And all this stuff. So anyway, I said, okay, I can do that. So I go in there and I start doing everything and calling the electric company, how much it's going to cost us per hour and all this stuff. And I got everything. Because a friend of mine said, when you go in there, you better have things right with it. And I said, okay, I'm going to do that. So I went in there and told him, you don't need to, Sunday night, they had money bowling from like 8 to about midnight. You closed up at 1 o'clock on Sunday night. You don't need to be open on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 24 hours is good. And then on Sunday, you close up at 1 o'clock. So anyway, and I showed him everything I had, and he was pretty impressed with that. He said, would you be willing to run this bowling alley for a while? I said, yeah. I said, I don't know anything about it, but I said, I'll take a shot at it. And that's how I actually got started that way. And then I said, I'll take it if the Tony Shrell will teach me how to curve the ball from right to left. I threw a little bit of backup ball, looked at the pins when I started bowling. I did that when I was in the YBA league. I stood on the left side, a little bit of backup ball, and looked at the pins. And so anyway, they taught me how to hook the ball a little bit. And I got in there practicing. I was taking graduate courses in sports psychology because my baseball, I was devastated. I wasn't going to be able to play baseball. And the one night I was in there working, the local guys bowled for money. Guys from Parkersburg would come wheeling, and they'd come in there bowling for money. And man, that'd be great. But I mean, you know, I wasn't no way I could do it. So I started practicing, Wayne, every night that I didn't have classes. I'd be locked in there from 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock in the morning. And then when the accountant, Molly, would come in there at 6 in the morning, I'd get out. And I'd be in there practicing all night long. And about 6 months of that, I got bowling pretty good. So I told Tony, I said, I'm going to get down that jackpot on Thursday night.
How much do you have to pay to get in?
Well, they had different games.
Yeah.
I had $20. I borrowed $20, and I got down there in it the first night. And when the night was over with, I won $800. And that's how it got me started. And every Thursday night, I was down there. And I don't know how much I beat them guys out over about 6 months.
But that's like the Minnesota Fast.
Yeah, so, you know, and that kind of got me started. But that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to get that sports psychology degree and go back to work over at Morsari. I'd be assistant basketball, assistant baseball. I could work with the athletes and stuff. And that's what I wanted to do. Well, the bowling, I started bowling a few tournaments and winning them. And things got a little better. And I thought, well, you know, somebody said, why don't you go pro? I said, I'm no pro. I said, I like beating these guys here. I'm taking courses. I'm happy what I'm doing. And Adam Toney called me and said, I want to take you to a pro tournament. I said, no, I'm just an amateur. He said, no, I want to take it. I'm going to pay for it. I didn't have that much money at that time. In the first tournament, I did pretty good, finished 17th. It was in Richmond, and I didn't think anything about it. And then about 6 weeks later, he called me and said, I'm taking my family to Florida, Vero Beach. Coach Bob Mikus, remember him? He was down there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Adam was good friends with him, so we stayed with him. So anyway, we go down there, and he takes his Charlie and his sister and his wife and me, and we go down there, and we bowl the tournament in Vero Beach. I made the finals. The finals. Now, you talk about all these. I mean, I didn't know hardly any of them. I knew who Dave Davis was. He was a great bowler. And I knew a couple of bowlers. I've heard their names. But anyway, I made the finals down there. And that's when I thought, maybe I could do this. So I decided, okay, I'm going to work at it and try this. And so I got involved in bowling accidentally because I wasn't planning on doing that. And really, when I first started, Wayne, I wasn't in the bowl tournaments. I wanted to learn how to teach bowling because I'm self-taught. Nobody ever, there wasn't nobody around to teach you how to bowl. There wasn't nobody. And so I said, that'd be something I think I'd enjoy doing. And I'd get this sports psychology degree and I'll coach over there. And then summertime, I could maybe work with people in bowling. And that sort of was my plan. But I got sidetracked because my bowling got pretty good. And I went to the Masters. First time, I won the state bowling tournament the first year I bowled in. And you got a free trip to the Masters, and they paid for it. About 600 entries. All the pros were there. So I go up to Dayton, and I really didn't know what was going on. And they said, well, this is a double elimination tournament. So I go in there the first day, and I bowled 3 games total. And I bowled a guy on the tour named Pete Couture, and I beat him in the next match. And I thought it was over with. I thought I was done. I didn't know at the time it was double elimination till after I was getting my stuff coming out there, and Tommy Tuttle, who helped me a lot, he said, Steve, you got a lot more bowling to do. And I said, what do you mean? He says, double elimination. And that's really was the first time I really knew that. Got a huge screen up here. All the brackets, got your names up here. So you see up here, you won that. You're going to go here at 12 o'clock. You're going to bowl this guy. And just keep following as long as you win. And if you get beat, you go down in this bracket down here. Well, the next round, I bowled the guy that won the Masters last year out of Arizona. Beat him. And before you know it, Wayne, there was 8 undefeated, and I was one of them. There was Dick Weber, Mike Durbin, and all these, Hall of Famers. And then I started getting a little nervous. Anyway, I bowled Mike Durbin for the TV show. I needed a mark in the 9th or 10th frame. I go up there in the 9th frame, and I throw a ball, throw it good, and I left a 4-9, which is about a quarter minute away from throwing it perfect. And it's just it's a great pitch to you through, but you leave a 4-9. And I slid the 4 in front of the 9, so I needed a spare in the 10th. I threw a light shaker, it was a 5-7, and I miss it. Well, Mike Durbin needed a double in the 10th to make the TV show, and he did. Them pros, them good ones, they'll do that. But that's when I knew that I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this for a living, and I'm going to work at it. And that's how that developed. And I wasn't planning on doing it. I really was wanting to teach bowling and learn how to teach it and then work more Sarvey. Summertime, I could work with some of these bowlers and stuff and I could bowl, in the summertime and teach bowling. But I got sidetracked. And I've been doing it for 50 years.
When I worked at the Y, you came up here. You was about 30 years old then, I guess, and you were having some back issues. And I had this wise weight, a healthy back thing, and you came in. There was two or three other people, and kind of got stretched out a little bit. But then you had a car wreck in '84, and you kind of set you back a few years.
Yeah. Right? I remember that. I believe it was the old wild one.
Yeah.
You had the class, and I come in there. What had happened? I'd hurt my back. I was a dating girl from Charleston, and she was a dance teacher, and her mother and dad worked in the carnivals. They had the food trailer, cotton candy and all that stuff. And her big thing for her kids at the end of the year, she had a big party for them and cotton candy machine, and all that. So her dad was handing it to me, and I didn't know how heavy this thing was. And it actually handed it to me in the motor. It's not real heavy, but the motor's in the back part of it. When he handed it to me, I didn't realize that heavy. Man, it took me down, and it did something to my back. And that's when I started, you know, when I come up and seen you doing them stretches. But the car accident, I didn't really start back bowling about, I don't know, maybe 3 years competitive. But I never did get to go back on the tour until later on. And then I went out there and bowled a couple of pretty good tournaments. But I couldn't, I'd bowl a week or two, I'd have to go home. I'd be hurting so bad in my whole body. And it just wasn't ready. But in 84 now, I made more finals during the wintertime on the tour, the top 24 than anybody. I really was starting to learn out there. I missed that wintertime. I missed a TV show 4 times, one by 1 pin, Toledo, the big national tournament. I bowled Bob Chamberlain for the TV show. We tied. And then I went to one tournament. I missed by 9, one by 17, one by 19. And I was, Dick Weber said, it's unbelievable how quick you've learned this. And I said, well, I think the thing that, because I played high school and college sports, I learned to compete in these things. And I said, I've always had a pretty good eye and hand coordination. And that's what a lot of bowling is, feel. And he said, I asked him why. And he said, well, I heard your interview after you missed, you know, you missed a TV show with 1 pin. That 1 pin cost me $10,000, the chance to win 40 more. But, you know, I wasn't concerned. I just said, they interviewed me on TV and the radio. And he said, I listened to him. He said, you said the right things. He said, you're going to be okay. And he was right, because I had a good year that year, and I left the day after Christmas, you know, for California, and the trailer truck hit me, and I was just thankful I'm alive, you know, because the state policeman thought when he come down there, I wouldn't want to be alive. And they said my hands, I had to hold that steering wheel, couldn't hardly get my hand pried loose on the steering wheel.
Well, you had your... probably your best bowling after you got on a senior tour, I think. You won several different tournaments. How many perfect games have you thrown in your life?
I've had 44 perfect games. And a lot of people says, why don't you have more than that? Well, I haven't bowled legs. That's where the conditions are real easy.
Yeah.
The last time I bowled legs was in 92. A girlfriend of mine was bowling doubles. And that year I had 4 300 games. But I bowled the first year in Charleston. I bowled the first year over at Bowick. Emmett and Steve George owned it. And they alternated 2 weeks. One worked at night, one worked a day. Well, the one that worked at night, they let me bowl for them. And the next week, Steve would be at night, he'd let me bowl for him and Mr. Pugh and several people. And then I bowled, I started the double leagues over. I went to work for over at Bowick, running the bowling center for him. I bowled one doubles league a year, and that's it. I never did bowl leagues much, and that's where you get all your 300 games. Mine come from tournaments, and which is a lot tougher. But I had 44, won 15 pro tournaments, and I won 89 amateur tournaments. So I've won over 100 tournaments in my career. And I've been blessed that I've been able to do this, and I'm still trying to do it.
I know you got connected with Aculanes a little bit, and I heard that the people liked you down at Bluefield. You used to go down there and practice 100, 125 games a week.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
I went down there, Junior Mariotti, a good friend of mine. His dad treated me real good. The Beckley Bowling Alley at that time, you know, like at leisure, they didn't open up at 11 o'clock. I needed to practice early because I had things I wanted to do. I wanted to work out and all that. Well, I started going to Bluefield. They opened up at 9. Nobody bothered me. And Junior would tell him guys, every day I'd practice, be 5 or 6 of them guys sitting back there, some of the old timers, watch. And he said, just don't bother him while he's bowling. And when afterwards, he'll come up there and sit with him and talk. And I always did. I'd finish practicing and I'd, you know, 4 or 5 hours. Junior said in 6 months, I averaged 125 games a week. That's 25 games a day, 5 days a week for 6 months.
Wow.
And that particular year, I bowled more regionals than anybody. I bowled the Central, the East, and the Southern. I bowled two regular regionals and 4 national stops that year. I never missed the finals that whole year.
Right.
And I worked out, you know, in the gym. And then the one year I was up the Y, there was a little lady up there. I can't remember her name, but she worked out with weights, and she trained me, me and Bull Parker. Bull was about 370 pounds. I got him to work. Come with me every day. And Bull lost 100 pounds in about 12 months. and me and him was working together. And I'm trying to think of her name, but boy, she said, I don't have enough time to work with people. I said, let me tell you my story. I'm very serious what I'm doing. When I told her the story, she said, I'll work with you a few times. See, and then she said, I'll work with you all the time now. Because I went in there for business. And Shirley. She's a little old short girl that worked at the
Y. I think I know who you're talking about. But anyway,
she really, and she worked bull hard too. The first day, he was only on the treadmill 5 or 6 minutes. He had to get off of it. He ended up losing 100 pounds in 12 months. We worked together.
Now, did you, all this traveling and bowling, did you have a fat? Did you get married, have any kids or anything during that time? Or?
No, I've got several good girlfriends. I've had, I tell you, Wayne, I made a decision. I was dating a girl in Charleston, the one that taught dancing. And I went out to California, and we was planning on getting married. And it was hard to be out there, you know, and so after 4 stops, I just come back home. Anyway, I said, I'm not going to go out there, I'm going to get married and have a family and all this stuff like that. And anyway, it didn't work out between us. And her family got involved and her mother got drinking real bad. And it wasn't anything with her, but you know, she's going to stay with her family. And I understand that. So it just didn't work out. I made a decision then. I wasn't going to be 50% bowler and 50% husband and father. I made that choice.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm either going to do one or the other. And I loved to bowl. And at that time, I was teaching bowling a lot. So I just decided I was going to bowl. And it would probably work out.
Well, you played some softball, too. I remember when you guys used to come up here and play in Beckley. And a sportsman would come up. And you played on 5 corners. And, man, that'd be some great games. When you guys get in the finals. Yeah. The Wiseman boys from Sportsman. And you and Fatty and Billy Joe Hicks, I guess, play with you guys. Yeah. Man, that was some.
Yeah, and matter of fact, that one particular year, Marathon, we won every tournament. We never lost a tournament until we played in the finals of the regionals. Howard Furniture beat us. Of course, they was a pro team. He owned Charlotte Speedway, and he had furniture. He got players from all over the country. He paid them, and he took that team and played other teams for money. In other words, he may take his team and take it out there against one team in California, and they'd be out there for a week, and they'd be betting big money. Well, we played them down there, and they beat us like 77 to 15 in 5 innings, and they were just, I mean, they were pros.
Yeah.
Tony Carter's who pitched for the Reds, he played third base. The Jones boy played for Philadelphia 76ers. He was first baseman. They had him from all over creation. But that particular team, we was undefeated. We came up Beckley and played the Beckley All-Stars. We played them 2 games on Saturday and 2 games on Sunday. And I'm telling you, you couldn't get close to that ball field. There was people hanging. They were everywhere, you know. And it was a fun time. And I got to come home, you know, and some of the players, my mom and Dad, you know, that we had a big picnic at the house down on South Man's Drive and fed them. And it was just great, you know. But it was show people there were good softball teams in this state. But most of the guys I played with were coaches.
Yeah.
You know, Pete Kelly coached football. Fouth, he pitched for us. Yeah. We had 3 Morse Harvey players, me, Butch Glover, who pitched for us, and Carlucci, the shortstop. They played with us.
How many years did you play softball?
I played, my dad died in 77. I came back, I left Charleston, came back to help my mother. And I didn't play that year. And then 5 Corners, the next year, the state tournament was in Lewisburg. No, White Sulphur Springs, White Sulphur Springs. And it got rained out, and there was 3 teams left. 2 Huntington teams in 5 Corners. Johnny Vinson, my good friend who played second base, he coached some Capital Boys, and Johnny was a great guy and a great second baseman. He was playing second base for him. And this wasn't really our Marathon team. Part of it was. But you had Robinson had got some other players off some other teams. And a boy from Beckley, Gilkerson, home run hitter at Gilkerson boy, he played with us. And anyway, Vince's football season started. He was assistant football coach, and he couldn't play. Robinson called me and said, hey, can you play softball? And I said, Robinson, I hadn't played any in a year. And he said, well, I need it. He said, you won't have to play short. You can play second. I said, well, there wasn't no way I could play short. My arm, you know. So anyway, Merv Parrish, a good friend of mine who was a really good bowler, lived right up above me, up on Russell Street. I started just throwing some. I wasn't worried about hitting. I just wanted to get this off. So I went with them down there in Huntington. Huntington was undefeated. We lost, Five Corners lost one, Huntington lost one. And it was in about the third inning. Five Corners had the bases loaded, one out. And we was up three or four runs, and that's where they started. We ended up beating them. And then we beat the Huntington team, two teams, and won a state championship. Then I was on five state championship teams during that time, but played with some really good players, you know.
Yeah, that softball, it was huge. I was the local commissioner around here for several years and ran Fitzpatrick Park for one of the first years that they opened. And we had 36 open teams, 16 church teams, women's teams. I mean, we played 7 days a week, tournament every weekend. And anytime you wanted to have a tournament, you could just announce it 2 days before and you'd have at least eight teams.
Fitzpatrick was always in the state, was the best place. I mean, they always had stuff going on. But back when I played, you know, we had the two divisions.
Yeah.
You had open and A. And the marathon team, we really was an A team. We wasn't no open, but we won it. We went down to Reesville, North Carolina, and played Howard Furman. We won the first game, and then we played Howard's, and that was we knew what was going to happen there.
Did you ever play golf?
No, not really.
I just wondered. You'd probably be a pretty good golfer.
Well, I did play one time and shot 105, and I had a 3-iron, a 5-iron, a putter. I knew I couldn't hit no driver. and I could hit it pretty good. I mean, it wasn't long, but I could hit it pretty straight. I played par three. We used to go out there, remember, Grandview?
Yeah.
I played some par three, so I had a little bit of idea. But I played out there in Arizona, Nelson Burton, and another guy played a couple of my buddies, and I went along with them. I was going to be there. I was going to go get the beer for him and stuff in the cart. But I didn't play it because I didn't want to be doing anything in my bowling. Back or anything like that. But
what's on your bucket list? I mean, you got you're 73 years old now. And as a matter of fact, you and I, we celebrate 50 years for Morris Harvey this year. I got my Morris Harvey shirt on today. And what's on your bucket list? Is there something, anything you haven't done that you'd like to
do? Well, I tell you the one thing I really want to do, and I don't, you know, it's, the last 2 years, I haven't got to bowl much because of this injury. But I feel like I'm practicing hard now, and I'm going to start jumping up to 4 days a week, 15 games each day, get up 60 games. And hopefully maybe in the latter part of September or October, November, I'll get back started because there's a couple 60-year-old tournaments in September and one in November. But the one thing left on my bucket list to win one more pro tournament. That'd be 5 decades.
Wow.
And nobody's ever done it my age. and there's not a lot of people's ever done that. And of course, I've won 7 decades at tournaments. When I was 13, I won a tournament. It was a state, West Virginia State single tournament. I went with Sam Hampton, my brother, and Steve George, him down to Canal City. I just went to watch. And a guy knew me down there, and he said, "Why don't you get in this?" I said, "No, I just come down here with these guys." And I was 13, and I got in it and won it. I shoot 603, and that was a pretty big score back in them days. And I didn't realize it, Wayne, until probably a year ago. I was going through a lot of stuff. My mother left me, and I seen this little thing, and I didn't remember bowling that thing. And so from there, you know, I've won tournaments in 7 decades. And
so you'd like to win one more pro
tournament. And it doesn't matter, any kind of pro tournament. And I feel like if I can stay healthy, go to a tournament, stay healthy, I got a chance to do it because the 60-year-old tournaments, you know.
Yeah.
I've got a chance to win one of them things. And so that's the one thing I'd really like to do. But if it doesn't happen, I've had a good career and I've met a lot of good people. And I enjoy coaching bowling now, and I've got a couple of really good students. I got a wheelchair bowler out of Charleston. He's a 2-time national wheelchair champion. I started with him. I worked with him 6 months when I first met him, and he won the national championship. And then he won it the next year. And I work with him about every Wednesday. I go to Charleston to give lessons on Wednesday, and I work with him. And great guy, great family man, great church guy, and it's a pleasure to work with him. And I've got a couple of real young guys, two-handed. Bowling's coming two-handed now.
And well, bowling's changed.
Oh,
the
yes.
equipment has changed so much since you started.
Oh, my gracious. And, it's, the balls are powerful. The conditions are easier. That's why you see all these 300 games. The conditions are so easy now. And back when I first started, they would, well, when I come back to Beckley, for example, there was only one 300 game at Bowling. There was only one.
Huh.
And that was the East Old Insurance. Anyway, then when I got back in 77, Joe Gorska, who whose dad owned the ball now, shot one. There'd never been nobody ever averaged 200 at Bowling until I got in town. And that next year when I bowled with for him and Steve on that team, that men's league, I averaged 202 because Adam, Tony, and some of them guys, 199 was the highest average was ever because the conditions were tough back then.
Yeah.
Had that little lack of conditions. But now the conditions are easy. I mean, 300 games are everywhere. They don't give rings. They used to anytime you shot one, you got rings or watches or something. Now, once you get one, you don't get no more because there's thousands of them every week around this country. But that's the only thing I'd really like to do. I'm in the gym 5 days a week now, and I've lost a lot of body fat off my body. My body's in pretty good shape now.
Yeah, you look like you're.
And I'm rolling the ball pretty good, but you got to be able to bowl 3 days in a row. Now, I'm going to go 4 days now, 15 games a day, 60, for about 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. Then I'm going to go in there and see if I can go 3 days in a row, see what happens. And if I can do it, then I'm gonna be after it. I mean, I'm going to go till it.
I think you will. Yeah. Well, Steve, I sure appreciate you coming by and talking to us. I've enjoyed listening to you, and I'd like to get you back sometime.
We'll do
we've
it.
Got you some know, more stories.
You know, we was talking about that. I just wonder if they may have been somebody out there, Woodrow Wilson, that's been All-American. You don't keep up with it. But
I don't.
There's not many things you can be there because these McDonald's, that's, you know, a lot of people can be on that All-American list, McDonald's. But I'm talking about a legitimate first-team All-American. There's not a lot of sports you can do that in high school,
No. I don't know. I'd have to check into that. But like I said, I'd like to get you back. Appreciate you coming by and really enjoyed reminiscing with you.
Well, we'll do this. And maybe hopefully I can get this 5 decades because I know Gary Farber's going to do a nice article about me. And Morse Harvey's going to do a nice article. I'm going to work at it hard and if the good Lord's willing, the bowling gods bless me, I'll do it. If I don't, I've had a great career, you know, and I'll continue teaching bowling and because I love to do that. So anyway, but I thank you for having me here and I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And anybody else out there that'd like to be on our program, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com. And we'll get you on here. And remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. This is Wayne Bennett. God bless you.